Welcome to the Moving Past You Radio Show, a show about identifying, confronting, and embracing the obstacles that block and delay us in walking in our divine purpose. Each week, we delve into the complexities and rewards of walking in your purpose. Now, here's your host, Juanita Gaynor.
I know I was muted. I do this every time to myself, you know, and it's just like, I get to the point now, it's just like, you know, you're muted, right? So let's start this over. Happy New Year, everyone, because you probably read my lips when I said it. This is 2024, and you guys' support has been amazing, and I'm so excited about what's coming, what's happening for the year. I mean, when I think about when God gave me the directive to move how he is moving this season, everything that has happened, everything that has moved forward is beyond anything that I could have ever imagined. Like, you don't think that, you know, he gives you your, you know, host roster for like almost 4 months, that you don't, you know, you come across women with amazing stories and their path and how they've healed and how they're helping others. And so you just never wrap your mind around how amazing he operates, you know, because I mean, I know, but he's really shown me, he really has shown me how he does and how he has not only myself covered, but how he has a heart for you. And that he wants you to connect with people who can take you to your next level. Because you know what? I know I have so many people who've listened to me. I have. They've listened to me. They've followed me for a long time. But I may not be the one to take you to the finish line. But the amazing women that I've worked with over the past couple of months are those people. That may be your person. So definitely reach out. Now, we're starting the year off and we're like, I started the first, you know, the season off. Hard hitting. But we're starting the new year off hard hitting because this is a story that never changes. This is something that's always needed. Like it's never going to stop happening. And with everything that is going on right now in the world, we really need to be having these conversations more and more and hard hitting. And with that, I am so excited that with tonight's guest, Ms. Michelle Hall. Now, I was on her podcast and we was talking about my story. So we're going to be going back and forth and we're going to just really get down and deep about, you know, the trauma and overcoming childhood sexual abuse. And it can be, you know, triggering to some. So before we even get started and before I do the introductions, what we are going to do is I'm going to go ahead and play the trigger warning because, again, I want you to be fully aware of what we're going to talk about. I want to make sure that you're provided the resources that is necessary so that you are not jolting triggered and you don't know what those resources are. Okay, because again, we want you to be a part of the conversation, but we understand if you cannot. Okay, so we're going to play the trigger warning. We're going to then introduce our guests, and then we're going to really deep dive into this topic. And we're going to be talking about how we've gotten through, what are the next steps, and how we can hopefully help you carry on and move through into your healing.
Hello, everyone. Before we dive into today's important discussion about sexual assault, we want to take a moment to acknowledge that this topic can be deeply triggering and emotional for many individuals. We are committed to creating a safe and supportive space for our audience. If you have experienced sexual assault or are sensitive to this topic, please be aware that the following conversation may contain explicit content and detailed discussions. It is perfectly okay to step away from this discussion if you feel overwhelmed at any point. Your well-being is our top priority, and we encourage you to prioritize your mental and emotional health. If you need support during or after this discussion, consider reaching out to a trusted friend, family member, or a mental health professional who can provide guidance and assistance. Additionally, if you or someone you know is in immediate danger or needs help related to sexual assault, please don't hesitate to contact your local emergency services or a crisis hotline, such as the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-HOPE. That's 1-800-656-4673. We appreciate your courage in joining us for this conversation, and we hope that together we can raise awareness, provide support, and promote healing for those who have been affected by sexual assault. Thank you for joining us today. Let's begin our discussion with the utmost compassion and understanding for one another.
Thank you for that. And without further ado, let me go ahead and introduce tonight's guest, Ms. Michelle Hall. She's a coach, author, and speaker, and we're going to be discussing overcoming childhood sexual trauma. And you're just in for an amazing testimony. And let me just read her bio and we're going to get started. Michelle Hall is a compassionate and experienced certified Christian life coach dedicated to guiding individuals on their journey towards healing and empowerment. With a deep understanding of the profound impact of childhood sexual abuse, Michelle offers a unique perspective and supportive approach to help survivors overcome their challenges and embrace a life of purpose and fulfillment. Early in her own life, Michelle faced a tremendous adversity of childhood sexual abuse, which profoundly shaped her resilience and determination. This painful experience ultimately ignited her unwavering commitment to helping others who have endured a similar trauma. Her own healing journey, her professional training, and the Holy Spirit equips her with the insight and empathy necessary to provide an understanding and non-judgmental space for her clients. With a heart rooted in faith, Michelle's approach to life coaching integrates Christian principles, offering a profound sense of hope and restoration. Her ability to blend her expertise in life coaching with her deep spiritual foundation makes her a trusted guide for individuals seeking to rebuild their lives after the devastating effects of childhood sexual abuse. Michelle Hall.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm great. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And so let me tell y'all, for most who don't know, we have conversations before we ever get on here. So we've had some deep dive conversations. She has an amazing podcast that she'll definitely tell you more about, you know, closer to the end so you can find her. And when I tell you, when God puts us together, now, the Holy Spirit is amazing. Because yes. Without him, I would be cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
I think I would too.
You know, right? I'm probably a little off, and I embrace that. I embrace it wholly. But he has really shaped and guided, you know, me and my decision-making and just in purpose as well. So, Michelle, I'm going to have you start out by just telling a little bit of your story. What got you started and why do you do what you do? What was the main driving force to helping survivors? Because I'm saying survivors today because sexual abuse doesn't just not happen to us girls. And I think that is also the biggest misconception. There are so many young men who are affected by it as well. And sometimes we overlook because we're just focused on the girls.
So. That is true. That's true. The statistics for sexual abuse of women or girls and boys before the age of 18 is staggering. I believe it is 1 in 5 girls and about 1 in 10 boys, I think. So it's far more than it should be. And I'm not even sure that statistic is accurate because so many people don't report. So it's probably a lot more than that. But I work with specifically women survivors, because I feel such a connection with women. And I do this work because I was sexually abused, basically, I was raped when I was 10 years old, starting around age 10 by two of my very close family members that I grew up with. And I never told anyone while I was, you know, as a kid, I didn't tell anyone. I just I wanted it to not be true. I wanted it to not have happened, like so many women. And so I dissociated myself from it and I stuffed it down, tried to act like it never happened and that it didn't affect me when it really did. And I kept that secret for about 30 years. I mean, I held on to it for so long because, you know, I've been told that I'm a little stubborn, but I really just decided as a young girl that I'm just not going to tell anybody that this ever happened. I felt like it was something that I could just stuff down and it would go away. And I was able to do that for a while. But what I didn't realize when I was younger is that those ripple effects of that experience was with me the whole time. And it was driving some of the choices that I was making as a young woman. And it kind of came to a point where so much was weighing on me because not only did I internalize that, there were just other things in life that I had internalized. And it just built up. It built up and it was so heavy, so very heavy, to where I kind of felt like I was going to have a nervous breakdown. And so I had to get that off my chest and off my mind. And I was finally able to eke those words out to my now ex-husband. But I was able to squeak those words out. I was so afraid to tell him what had happened to me because I didn't know how he was going to respond. But I was able to get those words out. And I'm so very thankful to him to this day, even though we are no longer married, that he was very supportive of me. And he encouraged me to get into counseling. And that was where my healing really, really started.
Yeah. And I can understand that. Like, I didn't necessarily tell people. It really, a lot of my family knew. You know, for me, my mother was the cause. She would pimp me out for her drugs. Right. So it was just like, there was no protection. So you don't say anything because as a child who, you know, you don't have a real stable place to live, you're moving, whatever, you don't say anything because, you know, you want to make sure you have a house to live in or food to eat. And then if you're an older sibling, you're protecting younger siblings. So yeah, you take on a bunch more. And I can be honest, it was, oh my goodness, it was probably 2018. It's only been about 5 or 6 years that mm-hmm. I've really been counseling and talking about it. I was preparing for a summit. A friend of mine's had heard me on a radio show. You know, look, Blog Talk Radio. So you know I'm dating how far this was. And a good pastor friend of mine's, we went to the same ministry. And he said, oh, I want you to be on. And we were talking about church hurt. And I was talking about it. And they was just so crushed. And so that's when I began to deal with it. And I was like, I thought I had it because it was stuffed down and whatever. And then had almost a complete breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about it. And it was just like, ooh. And you know, you think other things are triggering it, and it's, you know, life situations, you think it's relationships, and it's not. It's really because we didn't tell nobody.
Right. And that is so very heavy. I don't think even women who are carrying this trauma even realizes the heaviness of it until you start to release it. You know, when I got into counseling, I think it was probably back in 2014, 2015 timeframe. I had no idea what that journey was going to be like, but it ended up being really a reconciliation of not just the sexual abuse trauma that I had, but from other things that I had experienced in life as well. Like I said, I internalized things. I just didn't you know, I had some things that happened in my life, even prior to the sexual abuse. One of the things is that I'm fatherless. You know, I don't know who my father is. And that was very much a wound for me that affected me very deeply. And so I felt a sense of, you know, I felt a sense of unworthiness, a sense of abandonment for not knowing who this man was. And, you know, all of that had affected my self-esteem already. And then also, you know, I was born with a defect in my right eye, and so I'm visually impaired. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a kid, I wore thick glasses, you know, those Coke bottle types. Yes, girl. And so I got picked on. You know, I got picked on a lot. And so all of those things were already into play at the time, you know, I experienced the sexual trauma. And that was like, really, you know, I'm like, what else can happen? And so that was just really, you know, just the pivotal thing that really just kind of solidified how I felt about myself with the low self-esteem. I was like, you know, I was very pessimistic. You know, I didn't expect any good things to happen because I had experienced what I felt like was so many negative things. And I just didn't expect good things. But the thing about it is, I was good at hiding it. At least I think I was, because nobody knew. Nobody never questioned me about anything, because I just, you know, I'm like, well, I'm just going to act like this. You know, this stuff doesn't bother me. And I just moved on. And so, you know, I got so tired of carrying this stuff and pretending something didn't happen that had happened, and that I really needed to deal with it. I think I was afraid to deal with it, but I knew for my own sanity that it was something that I needed to do. So that counseling ended up taking several years, because it was a reconciliation of a lot of things,
yeah.
A lot of things. But I'm so, so very thankful that I did it. So thankful. And even after that, when I felt like I had really, you know, dealt with things to the extent that I needed to, I still didn't tell my family. Now, my husband knew, but I didn't tell my sisters or my mother. I didn't tell anybody. And that was still the intent. I still had no intent to tell them.
Yeah.
But, and I wanted to work with women survivors, but I couldn't do it because I was not even willing to tell my own story publicly. So I'm like, I can't help other women tell their story and get their healing when I'm not even willing to tell my own story.
Yeah.
And so, an opportunity came about for me to share my story. God just made a way, because I, like I said, I can be a little stubborn, and I was like, "Yep, I'm not telling this," but it just came about, and I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was God, yeah, that made that way, and that's when I knew it was time for me to get into this coaching, because I was ready and willing to share my own story.
Yeah. And I think, and it's funny when we're talking about the parallels of when I think about even in coming out in my story, people always was like, "You're so mean." And it wasn't until, you know, I've gone through counseling, really gone through some real healing. Let me stress that now. I can be still a little mean. But it was more a defense mechanism, mm-hmm, because I was already hurt. I was already abused. I was already misused. So I wasn't trying to open the door for more trauma.
Right, right.
And then, of course, the trauma made you just not trust no one. Mm-hmm. And it's not about us being pessimistic. It was like, nah, I already don't believe. I believe you dirty. Now, there's a little glimmer of hope that you're not, but I already believe that you're a low down dirty dog. And then when you act like that, and I'm like, I just told you so. So we would just, we're protecting ourselves.
Absolutely. Yes.
So, yes. Now, counseling, I'm an advocate of counseling. I don't care what no one says, whatever you need, a professional. Like, we do life coaching. Let's say that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I work with, we, and probably you too, we work with your health, mental health professionals.
Yes.
We don't do that because there is a depth of emotions and things that trigger that a professional, a trained professional can get to and get you there safely.
Yes. Yes.
I remember when I went into my counseling session, and I remember they was telling me my poor therapist was shocked. She was almost in tears. She didn't want to give me my diagnosis because she said in all of her years, she dealt with, you know, childhood survivors, sexual abuse, all of that. In all of her years, she had not had nobody who was diagnosed the way I was and was still mentally in front of her, like not hospitalized somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's what shocked her. That's the grace of God right there.
Absolutely.
But the psychotherapist came in and he said, and this was the first time I heard it and it helped with my healing. It's okay that you're not okay.
Yes. Yes. But see, that's the mask. That's the mask. That's the pretending that we do because we don't want people to know that we're not okay.
Yeah.
And I did that for quite a while and it just gets exhausting and it makes no sense. Clearly it's something that we're doing to protect ourselves, but it's exhausting. It's exhausting. And it takes a toll. And with all of that going on, I just could not deal with it anymore. So I really needed the help that I got. Now in addition to counseling, you know, as a Christian, you know, I of course, went into prayer about that too, because I was so ready. I had carried this stuff for so long. I was so ready to let it go. And one of my prayers was, Lord, take me through this process. Take me through it. I am ready to let it go. Teach me what I need to learn and help me to release this burden. And for me, it was a purging process. It was a purging process. And one of the things that, like I say, I know God was all up in it and through it, because when I would go to church, I would go and I would just weep the whole service. I would just weep. And I knew that was God cleansing me. And I don't know how long that went on. I know it was probably a couple of months, and I know these people at church was probably wondering what in the world is wrong with this woman. But it was just a quiet weeping, just the tears would just flow. And I would, after service, I would get in my car, I would clean my face up, and I would go home and act like nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
And then I noticed one Sunday that there was no more weeping.
Yeah.
And I said, Lord, I thank you.
Yeah.
So it was a combination for me. I definitely needed the counseling, the outlet, the verbal purging of all that I had held on to and that I had not spoken about for all those years. But then I also had the spiritual aspect of it too, of a physical purging through my tears. And I'm so thankful. And I'm so in awe still where I come from, to where I'm never, ever, ever going to share this story, to being a life coach and being on podcasts and radio shows and telling my story. I mean, that is nothing but God, because I was determined that I was not going to put this out there.
Yeah, look, this was never coming out. I was never going to ever say it. And because for me, it was a, you know, I know people don't, you know, they say, okay, I'm in a church, whatever, because not only was I abused but with the hands of my mom, I was abused by members in the church as well. So I had a double whammy. Yes. And so for me, it was knowing that I was different spiritually. I knew that I had a call and I couldn't understand it. And it was like, I knew that it was my responsibility to read the word, to understand the word for myself, because at that point in time, I wasn't trusting of most people. Mm-hmm. And so it was me really getting back into the word and getting key scriptures. Now, I hate when people break up scriptures, but God had given me certain ones, and Jeremiah 29:11 is one of them. And it focuses on that, how he has hope and a future. People misinterpret that. Well, everything is for your good. And so that was one that I clung on to going through the healing process. And so when I was strong enough and able enough, he placed me in a ministry to then now cover me. So mm-hmm. there's two different outlets. I know people think, well, I'm done with the church, whatever. God will give you a way back in, but he will place you where you need to be. Mm-hmm. And it's key when you said the prayer. And I noticed our prayers were similar. And I'll just explain for some people. For people who've gone through trauma, the prayers that we pray to God, we don't ask God to show us what the thing is, because if he shows us what it is, we're going to try to justify keeping it there and not removing it. So my prayer was always, Lord, please remove whomever and whatever is going to hinder me and doing what you need me to do. Mm-hmm. Because if I ask him to show me, I'm going to try to justify what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm no longer shocked by what disappears. Like, well, I remember the first time I prayed that prayer, I was shocked by what was gone. Mm. You know, whole relationship, like relationship for 5 years, just
gone.
One, just poof into thin air.
Yeah.
You know, so we pray. I know people who are listening now who have gone through trauma or is going through healing, and you're like, why do I pray these type of prayers, or why I ask these questions? It's because in our trauma, we know God, you know, we know, and God knows that if he gives us an option to not do something, we're not going to do it. So.
Yes. Well, and it's, you know, everybody's journey is different and how they process things, but it's not easy going back and facing those feelings, facing the effects that it had on you and the pain that it's caused you from the time that it took place. And a lot of times, I think some people just don't want to feel the pain. They don't want to go back and feel the pain. And I understand that. I really do. But it's so worth it. It's so worth it to do it and get on the other side of it. And that's what I really want to help survivors realize, because just because you're a survivor doesn't mean that you don't still have some issues with what took place.
Yes.
And my goal is to help women move beyond survivor into overcomer more than a conqueror. Yes. To where they can, you know, we won't ever really forget what happened. Right. But I do wholeheartedly believe we can get to a point to where it doesn't trigger us, to where it doesn't affect our everyday life.
Yeah.
And to where we can, you know, get a true sense of who we are and who God made us to be, so that we can live the life that God wants us to live. And a lot of times there's a lack of self-love. There's a lack of, you know, people feel like they're just not worthy. And so they may stay in, you know, a relationship, or they may stay in a job that's, you know, that's not where they're not using their full skills. And, you know, it holds us back. It holds us back when we are not fully aware of who we are, and when we don't have that self-love. And, you know, it's my goal, is my hope and my goal to help women move beyond survivor into overcoming and thriving and, you know, living as normal a life as possible, you know, knowing that this happened, but it does not define who I am.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. I can say one of the things that I'm excited about that it's been happening in just in the last couple of days, that's been happening in the last couple of months. And I know a lot of people have had a conversation about it or concerned about it, but I'm excited about the number of men and women who are coming out, beginning to tell their stories, mm-hmm. who have found strength in social media, who have found strength in someone else telling their story. And they're like, okay, I'm not alone. How does like what I call the collective bargaining, how does that play in the role of helping, you know, survivors or those who are still really in the pre-survivor stage? Mm-hmm. I mean, you haven't really begun to deal with it, but how have you been seeing, you know, just with the events that have been going on, how this is going to potentially shift about, of course, the work that we do, but how overall people are really beginning to embrace healing and restoration?
I think that is great, because I think a lot of survivors feel like they are all alone, and that they are the only one, or they don't realize the, you know, how widespread this thing is. And that probably if you're in a room of 10 women, you probably have at least 3 or 4 that has been a victim of some form of sexual abuse. And I think as people come forward and share their story, hopefully it'll become a little easier, and they'll realize that, hey, I am not alone. Other people have experienced this, and watching someone else's bravery and someone else's courage to tell their story and share, I think it will help those who have that fear of coming forward to, you know, start to chip away at that and help give them the courage that they need, whether it's a big step as far as going to counseling or doing something of that nature, or whether it's to get a book, you know, and start reading about things that they can do. Because like I said, everyone's journey is different, and you have to start your healing process when you're ready to start your process. If you're not ready to deal with it, it's probably not going to go well. So you have to get to a point where you're ready. Yeah. And that could be through books or through courses, listening to podcasts. You know, they may not be ready to just share their story with someone else yet. They may want to work on it, you know, within themselves. So hopefully with people coming forward and the awareness is going up, that'll help those women and men who have been afraid to tell their story. Hopefully that'll start to chip away at that, and they will get the courage to do what they, you know, to get to their healing.
Yes. And also what I want to do, and we can talk more, is for those who are looking to support, for those who are on the outside, we need you to understand that there's a level of empathy and compassion that you have to have. You know, I love how even when I started telling my story, and when I was telling someone, like, it was like I was probably like 14, 15 when my abuse finally stopped, because I threatened the person who was abusing me. I threatened mm-hmm. to tell his wife.
Wow.
And it stopped because I was tired. It wasn't about, I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know that it was wrong, whatever. I was just tired of dealing with it and just whatever. It was just like, I didn't want to be bothered. But then, you know, for someone to say, well, you were 15, you didn't know. Well, when this has been happening since you was 5, yeah. You don't know that that's not a part of your normal day-to-day life. Like if you go to other places and don't happen, it's weird. So I want those who are looking on the outside, looking in, to understand that everyone's situation is different. And just because you think you would do something in the scenario, and I think that's a lot of the you know, stuff that's going on, the vibe that's going on. Well, in my situation, if I was, no, you wouldn't.
Yeah. I've heard that, you know, I've heard that with these cases, I've heard that with, you know, rape cases, you know, all of that stuff that's going on with the Me Too and all of that, you know, well, why didn't they tell, you know, all those years ago? I can say that if you haven't walked in the shoes, you don't understand. You just don't. And there are various reasons why people don't tell. There's fear. There's shame. There's guilt. It could be a situation where a child told a parent and the parent didn't do anything about it and they felt shut down. Yeah. You know, there's so much that goes into it. And, you know, here over the last 10 years, I've experienced a lot of, I've gone through, you know, the healing from this. My marriage actually ended during this time as well. And so I had to deal with that also. And I can tell you 100%, until you experience something and walk in the shoes, you don't know how you will respond to something or how you would have responded to something. It's real easy to say, well, why didn't you tell right away? But for a kid who is reliant on parents, I mean, the abuser could be a parent. The abuser could be a mother. It could be a father. You know, it could be a brother. And you have no control as a child. You have none. It's not like you can go out and get your own place to stay. It's not like you can do that. And so there's a lot of reasons why children don't tell. And, you know, I'm sure that's the same reason for grown women who experience sexual assault. There's a lot of shame around it. There's a lot of shame. And people, I think, just really don't want others to know that they've experienced something of this nature.
Yeah. And also, I can also say too, probably also with law enforcement and the courts, like there hasn't been enough training around sensitivity around it, you know, and, you know, we still go by the good old boy network, you know, oh, boys will be boys or girls will be girls.
Yes.
And, you know, or in the case of boys, it's looked as, you know, a pat on the back. Oh, that's an older woman. Like, what are you talking about? You yeah. should be proud. It's not looked at for what it is, which is an assault. Right. You know, so right. The male child is conflicted because he was like, this doesn't feel good to, you know,
right.
to me.
Right.
And then with the girls, like, we were taught that the men are supposed to protect you or whatever, but if they're the ones who was also abusing you, and so it translates into adulthood as well. Like, yeah. you know, because I know for me, I'm like, if you don't, it was easy to do. Now, I probably wouldn't let you hit me, but emotionally, I was devastated because there was nothing there. There was no foundation. The times, when you think about the times that we should have been, that foundation should have been built up, it was being torn down. So mm-hmm. we didn't have it.
Right.
So we're empty. We're actually walking on, you know, eggshells mm-hmm. and glass at this point because it wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so it's in taking that, you know, kindness and that care to understand that people have become strong enough now, you know, just think about it. When I think about some of the stories that are coming out, it's not about people's like, oh, well, it's about the money or it's about whatever. No, it's about statute of limitations of far gone. It's like they can now tell it or they can put it in paper and then it can be read from mm-hmm. time forward. It mm-hmm. can let other and outpower other people who may be close to be like, OK, she did that. I'm about to go tell my story.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And another thing, too. That is so very unfortunate, but all too common, is victim blaming. You know, so many young girls are blamed for what happened to them, whether it goes back to you're being fast, you know, or you shouldn't be in men's faces. You know, it's crazy. It's just insane, the thought that you're blaming, you know, eight, nine, 10-year-old for, you know, being in a grown man's face instead of blaming the grown man for looking at a child in an inappropriate manner. But it happens, and it happens a lot. It yeah. happens a lot. And, you know, if you have been sexually assaulted, And then you are blame, you go to someone that you feel safe with and they blame you. That's a whole different trauma that you've got to deal with, because now you can't trust this person. This person that's supposed to be looking out for you and protecting you is now blaming you for this thing that you know is wrong. And you're young. People don't know how to process stuff. Kids can't, you know, they don't have the capacity to process things. And like I said, you know, earlier, you know, it's not like you can up and go. It's not like you're a grown woman and you can leave. You're a child. So it's like you're stuck there.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. And also sometimes it's difficult. You were talking about law enforcement, but sometimes it's difficult to prove a case. And so, you know, some victims may feel like, well, what's the point in even reporting? Because is his word against my word? And like the victim blaming, oftentimes family will side with the perpetrator and alienate the victim. It's insane. It is absolutely insane how that works.
Yes. That I've seen cases of it. And like, so you're just going to throw an 8-year-old out to dry? Like, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
And I want people to sometimes look at, okay, why does an 8-year-old know this type of information? I don't think anyone critically thinks when, you know, allegations are brought up or when children start having the conversations, like, why does a child think like that? Because they're not supposed to.
Right.
You know, because that's the take I take when I see even, you know, celebrities or whatever acting out. The first question I have is, what happened in childhood? What trigger that situation hit that just spazzed them out? Because it really is something that's there. It's just like, why does that child know how to, what that is? They're 7. Mm-hmm. And no one addresses that. No one thinks about that. It's just like, oh, you're being fast. Fast for what? Like, their bodies right. are developing.
What does that even mean? I don't even know what that means.
I have a whole theory on that. That's a whole church thing. And that distinctly, and I always upset people, and that's what I do. And I don't care. But that distinctly derives from the Black church. And I don't care, mm-hmm. you know, and people be like, oh, well, we're going to do a whole segment on that. But stuff like that distinctly derives from the Black church. And I'll be honest with you, if you hear leaders, especially men in the church saying, oh, she's fast, you need to perk your ears up. Your antenna need to go up, because what they're doing is that they're creating a narrative to be able to abuse that child without any, you know, repercussions, because that means you're not going to believe that child when they come to you and say something's going on, because it's already been put in the atmosphere and put out there that there's something that they're not. And it is what abusers do to groom and to abuse children. They put the narrative out there, and women are responsible for it too. They help. And that's a whole nother topic. So when you hear those things, and when you see those things, you need to be really aware about, wait a minute, why are you saying she fast? Or why are you saying he too? Like, those are questions we need to start asking. Because when you say that, you're putting a narrative out there to make it easy for you to have access to a child without any accountability or responsibility. You know?
So. Yeah. Yeah, that, the whole church thing. I know you have a whole lot of experience with that, and I know that's a hot topic for you. My experience is not related to that, but I know that it goes on in the church, and not just the Black church. I mean, clearly we know what's going on in the Catholic church.
I can speak on both.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that needs more scrutiny. But
you know, so tell me about what you're working on, what, you know, and projects that you got coming up, like how you uniquely work with your clients, you know, when someone comes to you, like what it could, and I know everyone's different, but just on general, what does that look like? What are you working on currently to facilitate this healing journey for women?
Well, it's an application process because, like I said, everyone's journey is different, and some women may need to get some other treatment before coming to work with me. I am not a trauma coach. So, you know, I have to do some, I need to get some information from them and pray and let the Holy Spirit lead me to who needs to be in my program. So, you know, that's the first thing. And, once I bring them in, once they are part of the program, my program is three phases. And, it's the awake phase, the activate phase, and the actualize phase. And so basically you're going to go back and you're going to face what happened and how it affected you. I think it's real important to really be able to know that, because even though you may know it in your mind, it may be in the back of your mind, it may be in your subconscious. But I think it's good to know that, because once you know that, then you kind of know what to work with beyond that.
Right.
And so that's the first part, is to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And then we create a plan to go to the next phase, which is the activate phase, which is to actually work on those things that you figured out in the awake phase, as far as how the trauma affected you and how it's manifesting in your life right now. We work with that in the activate phase. And then in the last phase is when we start to set goals for what you want your life to be, you know, now that you know these other things and you've worked on the issues. And then we go into that last phase and we work through that. And, you know, that could be goal setting, you know, is mainly what it is. But you get to craft what you want your life to be. Mm-hmm. And so that's the work that I do through my coaching program. Right now I'm only coaching one-on-one. But later in the year, I do want to start a group program so I can reach more women. And I think we are better in numbers.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you just need that support and to hear that you are not alone and that other people are going through the same thing that you're going through. So that's my plan for later in the year. And I'm working on, I'm putting together a survivor's ball. It's going to be a virtual event. And I want to do that. I'm going to do that in April, which is sexual assault. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do that in April. So I'm planning that. So I'll certainly have you on my email list so you can know about that. And I'm so excited about that, because I don't know of any other thing where survivors are celebrated. And like you say, just to be able to function in the world day to day, holding on to whatever it is you're holding on to based on how it affected you and life, is worthy of celebration. Yeah. And also, hopefully that'll be a catalyst to help those who haven't actually started their healing journey to start their journey. I plan on having speakers, and I'll talk to you about that. But I'm planning on having speakers come in who have gone through healing to share their stories, because I think that's encouraging to someone who has not started their journey yet. So I have big plans for 2024. I don't think I've talked to you since then, but I left my full-time job. And I'm doing this full time. So I'm really, yes. So I am thoroughly excited about how the Lord is going to move in 2024 and the women that he's going to bring into my path. It is time. It is time for women to start healing.
Absolutely.
And to not be in bondage.
Yeah. 2024 is going to be amazing. 2024 is what I call the standing on business year, because it's about that time,
yeah,
you know, to actually do that. And like you were saying, the group coaching, I think for the group coaching is going to be the way to go, because mm-hmm. I see the abundance of women that are going to need that help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we may have some, we have to do one-on-one, but the group aspect of it, it's called like bringing back community, bringing back the collective, you know, is what I'd like to call it, because I think that's been lost.
Mm-hmm.
Has been lost. And coming out of COVID, because I think COVID happening, it kind of made a push, because now people were in their feelings, in their homes, and whatever, and they had time to think about stuff, and they had time mm-hmm. to wonder what was going on. And so COVID really kind of just was the catalyst for everyone to say, you know what, I'm not going to do this no more. I'm not going to do any of this anymore.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited about it. I plan to write a book. I have a lot on the agenda, but I plan to write a book, and I'm working on a course. So I have a lot going on, and I'm just so excited about it. I'm just thrilled.
Well, I'm excited about it for you. And of course, you know, we're excited over here, because we're going to be the ones helping to promote it and put it out there and, you know, run it, because again, we want others to benefit from this amazing wealth of knowledge and, you know, tools, resources that are out there to help them get to the next step. So tell people how they can find you, where they can find you, and all that good, lovely stuff.
Well, I can be found on Facebook, in my Facebook group, The Esteemed Ones. I can be found on my business page is Live the Esteemed Life, which is what's on the screen. But I also have a Facebook group called The Esteemed Ones. You can find me on Instagram at Live the Esteemed Life. And I think that's everywhere. I think I'm mainly on Facebook and Instagram. And my website is livetheesteemedlife.com.
Yep. And just tell me a little bit more. Let's give them a little bit more about your podcast, because I was on your podcast.
You were on my podcast. And my podcast is called Broken to Blessed. And it is specifically designed to help women survivors it's really to inspire them, empower them, and encourage them if they're on a healing journey to keep going. And if they're not on a healing journey, to get started. And so I, like my episode for this week, I was talking about the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset, and how important a growth mindset is for healing. So I do have guests on from time to time, but I'm starting to do more solo shows, more teaching, because I just really want to get the word out and get the awareness out about this. The sexual abuse is so prominent and prevalent in this country, but probably all over the world. I've had people on the show from the UK. I've had someone on the show from the islands, and it's the stories. It's like the stories are the same. It's crazy.
It is.
And it's oftentimes, well, I told, but nobody listened. Mm-hmm. Or I didn't tell, or I told and somebody blamed me for it. You know, it's often one of those three.
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing a lot of, but it's widespread. And so the podcast is just a bit of encouragement each week to help the survivors to keep pushing through, because it's worth it. It's possible to heal. I know some people feel like, you know, I'll just never get over this, but that's that mindset that they need to change, because you can, you don't have to live in it. But you just got to shift your mindset. Yeah. And, so that's what I want people to know, that healing is possible. But you got to want to heal. And some people, I think, can do it maybe on their own, at least to a certain point.
Yeah.
Some people may need some psychotherapy, because some people's stories are horrendous, and it's not just sexual abuse. It could involve other stuff. It could be physical. It could be, it could be a lot of other things. You know, the cruelty that some children experience is just, is jaw dropping.
Yeah.
And so it just depends on where you are. And some people can just come into coaching and get the help that they need. So if you don't know where to start, you can always listen to a podcast. You can always Google and read some articles. You can call, one of the 1-800 numbers and talk to someone there. And, but start somewhere. And if it's just calling, the sexual assault hotline, it's confidential.
Yes.
And someone will listen to you. And that can be your catalyst to get started on a healing journey.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you so much for blessing us on this evening, because, I thank you for your strength, your courage, your resilience to tell your story. Because sometimes we don't tell one another, thank you for doing it, because you're reaching people that may have heard my story but couldn't relate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're seeing how you can go through it and not look like you've been through it, and come out on the other side and be successful and have successful businesses and families, in spite of. So I want to thank you so much for, joining me on this evening to have this discussion. I'm excited about what you're going to be doing in 2024. I'm excited.
Oh, we will be in touch. And thank you for having me. I do appreciate the opportunity to be on the show and share my story. And thank you for all that you do, because you have a story as well. And so, I don't want to end this without acknowledging you and your story and the work that you've done on yourself and in helping others. So thank you
so very much. Thank you. So guys, what did I tell you? What did I tell you? Okay. I just don't know what else to say. So let me to sum it up. You need to reach Miss Michelle. This is her website. I want you to go there. I want you to listen to the podcast. I want you to find her. You may not need her services, but you may know someone who may. You may know someone who may be at that point in life and needs, that additional push to go to the next level. Go for it. You may say, I don't know where to find them. You can come to our website and we'll connect you to there. But I want you to actually do that, because it's so important to continually move the needle forward into healing and to restoration, because it's not over. Once we leave here, it's going to be long done, and long gone. It's still going to be something that needs to be done. So, listen, share, let someone else know that there's people and help out there for them, and to be kind in your words. Have empathy and show people that we do love them. Again, thank you for joining us on this evening. We will be back next week, same time, same location, with another amazing story of strength and resilience and how you can just be moving into your own purpose and prosperity. I love you. Be blessed. And we will see you next week, same time, same location.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Moving Past You Radio Show. Make sure to visit our website at www.movingpastyou.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you found value in the show, rate us on iTunes or simply tell a friend about the show. And be sure to tune in next Friday for our next episode. And remember to always be kind in your word, your thought, and in your deed. Be blessed.